other material that may help you. I have a feeling. I know the person who wrote the questions. And I've seen the questions once. And so I'm hoping this will be relevant. Ready for clicker question number one? Yes, you are. So, a 30-year-old woman weighs 60 kilograms. This will be on your boards. I guarantee you. This will be on your boards. Don't ask me why. And, is that right if the, okay, you guys are already answering. Good. A lot of responses. Good, okay. 50 is enough. Stop. Answer E. That is correct. That is correct. Any questions on that one? Because it is correct. Because the 30-year-old woman weighs 60 kilograms. Her body water is half that, which is 30. Two-thirds are the inside. One-third is the outside. That means 10 liters on the outside. Three-quarters of the outside is interstitial. 7.5 is three-quarters of 10. Very excellent job. Do I have to set this thing again to 5? Every time. Okay. Next, something. Ooh, a 30-year-old man has 42 liters of total body fluid, 10.5 liters of interstitial fluid. How many liters of plasma volume does he have? Responses. Good. Answer, half the class says B, 3.5. You are correct. How do we get that? Well, if you have 42 liters of total body fluid, that's a given. Two-thirds is in the cells. So a third of 42 is how much? Okay. So that means 28 on the inside. 14 is on the outside. 14 minus 10.5 gives 3.5. Must be on the inside. So, there are an infinite number of ways of doing it. If you figured out a way to get to that, you did it. Math is great like that. Yes, it's true. It's true, it's true. As long as you get to it, however you like. Okay. Next question is, isotonic saline, this is the put them in the right order word thing. Isotonic saline regulates the blank volume to maintain blank. Free water, tonicity, regulates the blank volume to maintain blank. Which response fills in the blanks in the right order? That 63. All right, that's good. You guys must be 71. Okay, that's it. And we have answer C. 81%. It's correct. It's correct. So just to review, the isotonic saline regulates the extracellular volume to maintain clinical euvolemia. Free water or tonicity regulates the intracellular volume to maintain body tonicity. Okay, good. And just as a little review slide of all those, this slide sort of reminds you of all those things in the last three questions. How everything is separated out, and that the in the steady state, all compartments have the same tonicity, this kind of thing. So that's a slide in your regular slide deck. Next question coming up, and you're ready. This question says, a 64-year-old woman with a history of congestive heart failure presents to the emergency department complaining of difficulty breathing. Her physical exam shows crackles in the lungs, that means you hear stuff, fluid in the lungs, which is why she's short of breath, pitting edema, which means you push on her legs and you can put your finger dent in there, of both lower extremities. Blood tests show a sodium concentration of 134 with a normal range 136 to 144, albumin concentration of 3 grams per deciliter, normal 3.6 to 5. Your question is, her leg swelling, the edema, is primarily due to which of those? Okay, good. And the answer is, okay, a little bit of a spread here. A bit of a spread. Interesting. But the majority of the people got it correct. D is the correct answer. Let's look at this question. The question is telling you that she's coming in with a complaint that's related to too big an ECF. Her ECF's too big. She's complaining of it being too big. And then on exam, you're hearing it's too big, you're seeing it's too big, and you're pushing on it being too big. That means her ECF is too big. Well, A is wrong because the cells, it's not the cells you're feeling. You're pushing on her interstitium. Decreased plasma albumin? No. That's not the primary reason. People with edema are always salt overloaded. So C is wrong because it's not increased total body free water. D is correct. That the saline, she's got too much isotonic saline in her body. Now, even though her tonicity is not normal, that's not the reason she's so swollen. She's swollen because she's got heart failure, and that heart failure has caused her to have, for her to stay in steady state salt balance, in other words, for her to excrete the salt that she eats. We all do that at a very nice ECF volume of not being swollen. So the good news for her is she can stay in steady state. Salt in is salt out. But because her heart doesn't work that well, she achieves that steady state at the expense of having a much bigger driving force for salt excretion, which is the size of the ECF. The size of the ECF is the driving force for salt excretion. That puts an increased workload on the heart. We'll talk about that a lot next year in CRR. But for now, when you see people who are swollen and you're pushing on their interstitium, it's the interstitium that's the edema. That's what you're pushing on. It's full of saline. And so she's saline expanded. Her ECF is too big. Every time.
I'm just wondering, in these cases, when you have a greater plasma volume, is it typical to see maybe like a depressed concentration?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends on the person's nutrition and a lot of other things. But that doesn't matter because the answer here is that the patient's salt overloaded. That's why you're being always asked primarily the best answer. Now, if all the other answers weren't there, except for one, I'd pick the one answer that was there. But when you have a choice, pick the best. And just PS on that. People do not get swollen because their albumin's low. People get swollen because they're salt overloaded. How many times? Every time. Yep. Would I explain that? Yes. If you see people who are generally edematous, they're salt overloaded. That's the explanation. There are people born with no albumin in their body ever for their whole life. They don't have edema. Everything you heard about it in college or Stanley Kaplan or anything else is just not right. Sorry. All right, next year. We'll talk about it next year. But anyway, that's the answer for this year, and it will still be the answer next year. Guaranteed. We can talk about that more later if you want, but let's move on. So the next case. We have a healthy woman who is isotonic and clinically euvolemic. She develops a bad case of gastroenteritis with severe watery diarrhea. Now, you know what this is when I say severe watery diarrhea. You know what she has. It's not the walks. It's the, okay. Good. She's got severe watery diarrhea She's been drinking a lot of water to try to keep up with her losses. Because she says, ooh, this watery stuff is coming out. I should... Okay. She presents the emergency department complaining of a headache and dizziness. Exam shows she has lost 2.5 kilograms. Her blood pressure is low. 88 over 56 is a low blood pressure. Heart rate is fast, 120. So instead of her normal blood pressure of 110 over 70 or 115 over 75 and a heart rate of 72, she looks like this. Blood tests are obtained. Sodium concentration is low, 131, normal 136 to 144. Glucose, perfectly normal. Blood urea nitrogen, elevated. 7 to 14, normal, she's 28. This lady is now in the emergency room and you're taking care of her. You have one goal, to make her feel better. Which one of the following is the best prescription to give her? Of the ones, and I'm not saying the best in the world, I'm saying of these choices. Don't pick F. Good, 50 responses. And the answer is, ooh. Nobody picked F. Okay. Now that's very good. That's very good. Excellent. So this means that we have a good opportunity to go over some things. Okay, so the correct answer. Interestingly, oh no, the tied, yeah, good. C, it would have been my answer. Why? This lady's had the runs. She is losing diarrhea. She's lost 2.5 kilograms. But you can see she's lost salt and water and replaced it only with water, which is why her sodium concentration is low. If you lose solute in water and all you do is replace it with water, your concentration will be lower. That's why she has a headache, because her brain's a little swollen from, instead of her sampling the fluid that she was losing, and replacing just that. She replaced the fluid she was losing with just water. A common thing that people do. Nonetheless, that's why she's got a headache and that's why her sodium concentration is low. But she is volume depleted, ECF, and as promised, whenever you can make the diagnosis of volume depletion, the treatment is volume. The volume depleted need volume. Always give volume to the volume depleted. Don't give volume to the volume overloaded. Do give volume to the volume depleted. So, you certainly will rule out D, because it's not isotonic saline. And she needs volume, which is always isotonic saline. So D is wrong because she's already free water overloaded. Why would you ever give her more free water? It would be the wrong thing to do. Someone who's already got too much free water in her body, the sodium of 131, doesn't need any more free water. Do not give free water to the free water overloaded. So giving her 1 liter, 2 liters, or 7 liters of half isotonic is wrong. Giving her 2 liters of hypertonic saline is wrong. She didn't lose hypertonic saline. She doesn't need hypertonic saline. She needs volume in the form of isotonic saline. So now you're down to A, B, or C. How do you make that decision? It's easy. She's lost 2.5. Even if she's not having more diarrhea, 2's not enough. She lost 2.5. She's healthy. I'm going to give her 3. I'm going to give her 3 for 2 reasons. One, she lost 2.5, and the diarrhea might not be gone. So I want to give her back what she lost and stay a little ahead of her. You do this for people like this, they send you a Christmas card every single year, and they think you're a genius. Because they come in feeling terrible, terrible, terrible. You do one tiny little thing, give isotonic saline wide open, and they just... You will make a lot of people feel better if you remember this. So, since the class was all spread on this, is it clear now why I would consider the right answer of these choices to be yes? Thank you. She's got a low sodium concentration, that's correct. Yeah, yeah. And why does she have a low sodium concentration? But why didn't she excrete the water? Because she's volume depleted. So what will help her what will help her otherwise normal kidneys excrete all the extra free water? The kidney is always your friend. Give it what it needs and it will help you. If the problem is volume depletion, you give volume. I guarantee you in your life, if you could make the diagnosis of volume depletion in somebody, give them volume. It will have two effects. It will make some things better, and it will change nothing else. Giving volume to the volume depleted never makes anything worse. Because the kidney is immediately going to say, ooh, I got volume again. Hey, there's extra free water here. ADH will go down because whatever ADH is turned on by the fact that she's lost a lot of volume will go away. And she will excrete her water. And if you get, so you don't want to give her, and so that would be the argument to give her hypertonic saline?
Well, yeah, because you want to give volume.
No, you don't. You want to give, no, you don't. You want to give her volume and have the kidney do what the kidney does. That's why I said she's healthy. The kidney's in the game. The kidney's in the game. Okay, very good. Next question. Next. Oh, so this is to remind you the different intravenous solutions you have available. Now, there's only two that are important, the ones in blue. The reason those are important is one is salt and one is water. That's all you need. You can make the other ones. You got salt and got water? Before I came to Vermont, they called the hospital. I go, hi, I'm coming from New Haven, Connecticut. Two questions. You got the saline? Yeah. You got DIW? Yeah. Okay. Just ask.
Any reason to give anyone hypertonic?
There are certainly reasons to give people hypertonic saline. That's for you'll learn those reasons next year in CRR. Right now, you don't have any. So the class will thank you because if you see hypertonic saline as a choice on your exam, I suggest you ignore it. But yes, we give it. We give it all the time. You will learn how to give it. It's given essentially for severe hyponatremia in people who can't otherwise excrete water. You give it to people who've got severe SIADH. But you will not see those people till next year. Okay. Oh, no, not the twins. Not the twins. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, it wouldn't be fair to give you a twins question on the exam and not have a twins question in the review session, would it? Now, these twins are hypothetical because we know that no one's identical. Everyone's different. But so these are hypothetical twin brothers who are identical because they're hypothetical. And they're physically identical in every way. Their height, their weight, their muscle mass. They eat the same diet. They both eat 5 grams of salt a day. I mean, that's a pretty heavy salt diet. That's college diet. And they drink 2 liters of bottled water in addition to whatever else they want to drink every day. This is what they do. Okay? They're twins. Okay? At baseline, both twins are perfect. Euvolemic and isotonic. Let's see what happens. Twin A develops a small tumor that produces a constant rate of aldosterone. He goes from producing no aldosterone, or the right amount of aldosterone regulated, to unregulated constant. A little aldosterone pump is in his body. It never shuts off. His brother, at the same exact moment, develops a little tumor that produces a constant rate of antidiuretic hormone that never turns off. Now, this is a very, if you know where I'm going with this, you're very happy that I'm going this, because this is going to be good. Okay? By the time a new steady state develops, each twin has retained an additional 1,000 mils of fluid. I'm just telling you that. They're in a new steady state. If you put them on a scale, they weigh 1 kilogram more than they used to weigh. 1 kilogram more. They're still identical in the sense that they both weigh 1 kilogram more. They're still identical. But are they really, really identical? Well, let's see. Which of the following is correct regarding their extracellular volume and their intracellular fluid volume? There's your choices. 50 responses. Good. Let's see what we got. Ooh, you guys are good, good, good. Both A and D are correct. So, not only are both A and D correct, but let me ask you a follow-up question. Not that you'll pick, but follow-up question. They both weigh 1 kilogram more. The distribution of that 1 kilogram is exactly how you see. I'm going to give you three numbers. You tell me which one of these three numbers applies to twin A, and which one of these three numbers applies to twin B. I'm going to give you three potential sodium concentrations. Blood plasma sodium concentration. Yeah, three potential blood sodium concentrations. 137, 140, and 143. Which one goes with twin A? Which one goes with twin B? 137, 140, 143. Just give me twin A and twin B. Your two picks for twin A and twin B. Okay, twin A is 143. That's what you said. Good. And twin B is? I accept that. I would have also accepted twin A is 140 and twin B is 137. The key is that twin A is normal. They're both normal, but twin B is hyponatremic because he's got extra water in his body that twin A doesn't have. They both gained a kilogram. One got all volume, twin A. So if he started at 143, he's still 143. If he started at 140, he's still 140. If twin B, who was identical to twin A because I said they were identical, if he started at 140, he's now at 137 because he's retained water that he can't get rid of. There's extra water. He got ADH. He can't get rid of water. Now, let's ask this question. Why didn't twin A just explode? I mean, why did twin A go from, you know, regular to 1 kilogram bigger and just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger? The aldosterone never got shut off. How come he just doesn't go and get bigger and bigger and bigger and don't explode? He comes into a new steady state at which his ECF has gotten big enough to excrete the salt load even with the aldosterone he's got. That's right. Came into a new steady state. Why didn't twin B just have the sodium concentration go down to zero? ADH never stopped. Came into a new steady state. That's exactly right. When you put people on diuretics, they lose weight. They lose volume. Why don't they turn into a piece of dust? Because they come into a new steady state. Is it relevant to clinical medicine? Oh, I think so. Steady state. Don't go into medicine without it. All right. Next question is going to have five answers, I think. Oh, this is to remind you of glomerular hemodynamics. It's to remind you that there are two forces that favor filtration of GFR, that is the glomerular capillary pressure inside the capillary, and any oncotic pressure in Bowman space, versus the two opposing forces, the oncotic pressure in the vessel and any pressure that happens to be in Bowman space. We talked about how the fact that the distance between the green line and the red line, that's the region of filtration. If those lines are to meet, filtration stops. If they meet early, you waste a lot of capillary. You had a lot of capillary, you could have used it, you didn't use it all. Could use it all. Okay? So you try to use it all. Pretty much. Optimize it. Just throwing that out there. I don't know why I put that slide in there, but I did. Not sure why. Oh yeah, here's one. Here's how you think about regulation of GFR. We've talked about this. If you start off with a baseline situation, these are the pressures. 100 in the afferent, 60 in the glomerular capillary, 20, because you've got these resistances. There's a little game you can play to see what happens to renal blood flow and GFR as you change things. So if you give somebody a non-steroidal and the afferent resistance goes up, well, the GFR and the renal blood flow will both go down. On the other hand, if somebody gets an extra dose of angiotensin II, You'll see GFR go up, but renal blood flow will go down because the resistance is higher. Yes? D5W doing what? Yeah. Yeah. I never do it. It's a solution you see in the hospital. I don't know why. There's a lot of things I see in the hospital I don't understand. That's one of them. For your purposes, I wouldn't worry about anything that it's a. I'd worry about D5W. That's water. Normal saline. That's volume. And the thing that's in between. Half and half. I wouldn't concern myself with too much more than that right now. That's why, we got next year. I know you're worried. You want more, but next year. Okay. So anyway, this you have this slide in your deck. You should take a look at it. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying it again. Apparently, I don't get sick of saying it. I don't know why, but I'm saying it. Somebody responded to that anyway. Okay. I like it. I agree. I totally agree. B is always right. All right. Oh, I don't know why I looked. That must be. That's in the slide deck too. I don't know. Staring at that for some reason. I don't know why. I keep seeing slides and no questions. I don't understand. Why would I see slides with no questions? These must just be my favorite slides. Okay, finally a question. Which of the following would produce an increase in the driving force for the excretion of water? By the kidney. Responses. Yay. And the answer is, ooh, beautiful. Oh. Okay, so the answer is not B. Okay. The answer to this question works as follows. I told you that when you increase, remember the lady in heart failure with the big swollen legs? She's in steady state, meaning her salt output is equal to her salt input, but she's paying a price for that bad heart. She can only stay in steady state when her ECF is too big. That's the extra driving force she needs to excrete her salt because she's in heart failure. That's the price she pays for the heart failure. When you want to excrete free water, do you want your ADH level to be low or high? A stands for anti, not uncle diuretic, anti-diuretic. Okay. When you want to excrete water, do you want your ADH level to be high or low? Yes. When your ADH level is low, that changes the permeability. That's not the driving force. ADH controls the permeability for water excretion, not the driving force. Remember, we talked about driving forces and permeability as separate things that determine transport. The change in ADH level is correct, that the ADH level should go down when you want to treat water, but that's controlling the permeability for water, the channel, the aquaporin too. That's not a driving force, that's a permeability. The driving force, just like being salt overloaded is the driving force for salt excretion, being water overloaded is the driving force for water excretion. It's a decrease in plasma tonicity. The more water you drink, you say, thank you for doing that. I hear what you're saying. You're saying, watch me increase my driving force for water excretion by drinking more water. I don't care who you are. There's nothing in the world that makes you pee more than drinking water. Like I said, my patients sometimes say to me, Dr. Siegel, I go, how's your urine output? How you doing making urine? Oh, great. In fact, I'm making too much urine. I go, really? You go, yeah, keep it up at night. I got to get up out of bed, go pee it. I go, are you drinking a lot of water? Oh, yeah. Why? Oh, somebody told me to. I go, did I tell you to? No. I said, stop doing that and you'll stop peeing. Drink when you're thirsty. The more you drink when you're not thirsty, the more you're going to pee. If you want to pee, drink. If you want to sleep, don't drink before bed. Water. So please, like I'm saying, the driving force for salt excretion is the... Nobody wants to excrete salt more than when you have too much of it. Nobody wants to excrete water more than when you have too much of it. Who has too much salt? People who are edematous, like the lady with CHF. Who's got too much water? Somebody who's got a decrease in their plasma tonicity. How do you get a decrease in your plasma tonicity? You drink water. Drinking water increases the driving force for excretion of water. ADH controls the permeability. Together, it's a good system. Does everybody understand that? Because it's key. Yes, sir. The urine osmolality can be anything. I mean, you're supposed to pick the best answer. Urine osmolality is far from the best answer. It will be right every now and again, but A will be right every single day, every day for the rest of your life. That's the best answer. Works every time. Believe me, on the board exams, if you pick an answer you think is good, you're going to do badly. They're not asking to pick a good answer. They're always saying, what's the best? What's the most likely? If you pick something that could happen, but it's not the most likely, you're going to get it wrong. So let's say there's some situation that you have to get out of. Let's say you're giving a review session. And you need to, it's possible for alien extraterrestrials to come and take me away. It's possible. It's not the most likely. I know you hope it is. Okay. But anyway. So always, always, always for your boards, keep in mind they're not interested in what you think is good. They're interested in what you think is best. All right. Which of the following statements best summarizes the role of active transport of sodium and chloride along the thick ascending limb of Henle? Dilution of the urine, concentration of the interstitium, secretion of potassium, so on and so forth. Magical 50th response. There we go. Good. And the answer is 50% of the class say D, 50% of the class is correct. Here's a good example. A is a good answer. B is a good answer. D is the best answer. Because D is the answer that says A and B. And when you remove solute from the loop, you're simultaneously, that solute you remove from the lumen is diluting the urine and you're putting it into the interstitium, concentrating the interstitium. It's a twofer. It's one thing that results in two things. Dilution of the urine is done simultaneously with concentration of the interstitium. That's why the kidney sets it up that way. And of course, E is wrong because, as we all know, the lumen of the thick ascending limb is electropositive. Okay. Any questions on that one? Oh, look at this. This reminds me of something. A professional tennis player is competing at Wimbledon on a very hot day and wins after six long sets. That evening, the champion goes out with friends and drinks a large amount of non-alcoholic beer at the pub. Which of the following best summarizes the transport of salt and water of the champion, loop of Henle, and collecting duct, both during the match and then at the pub? I'll give you a hint, by the way. Only one out of 1,000 doctors thinks tennis is bad for the kidney. But 4 out of 5 dentists. Survey says, oh, look at that, 60. Survey says, 84% say, hey, you are geniuses. Yes, that is correct. So as I said, the loop of Henle has no reason if the definite were to end there. The loop of Henle does what the loop of Henle does and waits for the decision to be made by the collecting duct in ADH. So the loop of Henle is doing the same thing all day long. The collecting duct is doing something different. Here is a teaching slide about that. Whoops. So if you look at this diagram, you will see what you already know, that the nephron can be separated into three parts in terms of water permeability. The proximal tubule, all the way down, from the beginning of the proximal tubule, all the way down to the tip of the loop of Henle, where the hairpin is, you see aquaporin 1. This is a constitutively open water channel. It's because of aquaporin 1 that salt reabsorbed in the proximal tubule stays isotonic, because water's always got a permeability. It's because of aquaporin 1 that water can leave the thin descending limb and concentrate the urine. That channel is aquaporin 1. Once you turn in the hairpin, notice, no colors. There are no aquaporins. Water's not getting out. There's no permeability. Is there a driving force? Ooh, you betcha. Is there a permeability? No. Is there any transport? No. Any number times zero is zero. And then what happens is the interesting collecting tubule and connecting duct have these three aquaporins. These two are on the basolateral membrane and they're pretty much open. This one is under the control of ADH. Without ADH, no water gets out. With ADH, aquaporin 2 gets inserted. So you have three, water permeability of the nephron couldn't be simpler. From here to here, no problem. Water has no trouble leaving. Here to here, no problem. Water can't get out. Here to here, depends. Which is why that product is called depends. Okay? So that's something. Here, to look at it another way, you can look at it this way. This is another diagram that shows aquaporin 1 from the beginning to the descent, all through the descending loop of Henle. The ascending limb of Henle has nothing except the pump. Aquaporins are absent. And then they show up again here to make that point. Here is again a diagram you've seen. Here's the loop of Henle and the nephron on top of it. Nothing happens in the proximal tube except volume reabsorption isotonically. Then water leaves. Then water can't leave. And then you have a decision. Any questions on that? That's the way the kidney works. Okay. Next question, we think. Oh, yeah, this is just, again, you had this slide in your deck. Shows you ADH present, ADH not present. This is an old favorite. I know you guys hate this. Well, and I don't blame you. This should be hated. Nonetheless, it's how it works. So this is the slide that shows you again that along the proximal tubule, and I'll give you this slide. I mean, I'll make these. We'll be making these slides without the questions will be available to you. Not the questions. Can't let the questions out. I can't. It's a rule. Not my rule. Some rule. But the slides you can have. Okay. So that's just to remind you to look at that. Here's the transport. So I showed you the water. So again, this is the water along the nephron. This is the transport proteins along the nephron. For people that want to know what's the difference between early and late? The difference between early and late is, do we see ENaC or not? If it's the sodium chloride co-transporter and no ENaC, it's early. If there's no sodium chloride co-transporter and there is ENaC, it's the connecting tubule and the collecting duct. And in between is a transition zone. A little of each. A little of each. I don't know where one ends and one begins. Somewhere in there. Will I ask you where does one end and one begin? No, because I don't know. Will I ask you to understand which transport proteins, based on which transport proteins you see there, would you know? Yes, that's reasonable. And again, here is just another, puts together everything on how that countercurrent multiplication module that you saw. Here's all the elements. All of the water permeability coming up, down this way. Urea transport coming out of the collecting duct back in, and recycling, urea recycling, under the control of ADH. ADH in the inner medulla lets urea recycle, which is good, so that water coming out is not just water alone, it's urea. Because urea is always coming out here, you see how this sodium, you see how sodium can be transported passively. People say, what's the thin ascending limb for? The thin ascending limb can allow sodium out. How? Because sodium, there's a diffusive holes for sodium here, and it will follow its concentration gradient. If the sodium of the interstitium is kept on the lower side because urea is making up the concentration, sodium can move out. That's what allows sodium to move out. If there were no urea, the sodium would have to be higher, and sodium couldn't move out. This allows sodium to move out. And here's all the rest of our friends. So that should look familiar. Different ways of looking at the same thing. All right, this was a question that I received. So some of this is some of these questions are questions I got by email that I thought a lot of people might be wondering about. So I got a couple emails. Dr. Siegel, what's the difference between bicarbonate reclamation and bicarbonate regeneration? So I want to make that point clear. Bicarbonate reclamation is what the term that has been used to describe reabsorption of filtered bicarbonate. You're reclaiming the stuff you filtered. All of that is done by proton secretion, either by this proton secreting mechanism, sodium proton exchange, okay? And there is some proton pumping as well. The majority is done by this, but there's some proton pumping as well. But this reclamation doesn't tell you which pump is being used or which proton secretion pathway is being used. It tells you that what's being reabsorbed is the bicarbonate that got filtered. You don't have to reclaim what you didn't lose in filtration. On the other hand, bicarbonate regeneration is the term used for the making of new bicarbonate that never got a chance to be filtered because it was taken out of the body by acid before it got filtered. You can't filter what's gone. So when you eat carbohydrates and proteins, you consume bicarbonate in your body, okay? This bicarbonate never has a chance to get filtered because it was already consumed. But the kidney has to make it. You need it back. It's not filtered, so the kidney has to remake it. That's why we call it regeneration, remaking it. Not just retrieving it, remaking it. And so this motif is also the same. It's also done by proton secretion, but it's more often a proton ATPase, like in the alpha intercalated cells of the distal nephron. The terms are the terms. Reclamation is used when the bicarbonate has been filtered and you want to get it back. Regeneration is the term used when the bicarbonate was taken out of the body before it had a chance to be filtered. You still need it back. So you got to make, the kidney has to get back all of the filtered bicarbonate and all the bicarbonate that was lost somewhere else. And again, so I review this. What's similar is both processes use proton secretion. Proton secretion is the motif. What's different is that usually this protein is used to reclaim in the proximal tubule for most of that, and the H pumps are used to regenerate. But whether the kidney has to reclaim it or regenerate it, the bicarbonate has to be made in the kidney. Okay? And, again, that's why you need these things that can accept protons. If you didn't have urinary buffers, as soon as you start secreting protons into the urine, that's a free proton. A free proton is going to lower the pH. The only way you can prevent that pH from being lowered is to buffer it. If there were no buffers, as soon as you threw out a couple of protons, the pH would drop so far that the driving force would no longer favor that you couldn't push any more out. By having something buffer that proton, you can secrete another proton because the pH has not dropped. It's been buffered. That's why it's a buffer. Yeah. No. No. Because there's two forms of acid in your body. Given the time I had, I could not go into detailed acid-base chemistry, so I did not talk about respiratory disorders. PCO2 is volatile acid. You blow that off your lungs. A proton, because you eat a piece of pizza, you can't breathe that out. It's a proton. It took bicarbonate away. The answer is no. If it's volatile, you can breathe it out. If it's non-volatile, which is all this is non-volatile. It has to go out through the kidney, attached to either a titratable acid or ammonia. Know that and you're fine. Know anything else? I don't care. Here it is. This is what we talked about. This is what I care about. This is what I'm going to ask about. It doesn't matter. Carbon dioxide is all over your body. It doesn't matter. The source of everything is CO2 in water. Or the source of everything is protons and bicarbonate. Or the source of everything is H2CO3. These things exist in an equilibrium. So right now, I don't want you to care. If you want to care where it comes from, by all means. You don't need to. The kidney can get to it. So the kidney can take CO2 and combine it with water with carbonic anhydrase to make carbonic acid, and from that can split that to protons and bicarbonate. It does. The kidney does what it needs to do what you need to do. And so it can happen this way. It can happen otherwise. But here's the major players: CO2, water, carbonic anhydrase, protons. They're always there. Yeah. Your body's not secreting extra protons. Your body's secreting protons to get rid of the ones that you made when you ate them.
So if you're making more protons and you're...
Because you're eating.
Yeah, because you're eating.
Okay, you're eating and you're making more, you're increasing the acid load because you're eating more, or you're taking on acid because you've chosen to. Good.
So in that slide you had two bars, one with like a little bit of ammonia, one with a lot of ammonia.
Yes. It says exactly that. It says that when your kidney just looks around and says, what's this guy eating? I don't care. It's a lot of protons. What do we do when we see a lot of protons? We make a lot of ammonia. Why? Because we have to get rid of we have to get all that proton into the urine. How are we ever going to do that? We better make more ammonia. Why? Because that's the only thing we know how to make more of. It's very simple, actually. The kidney could have solved this problem 1,000 different ways. But for our benefit, it just said, we got some titratable acids. They do a little bit. They don't do much. They don't really, you don't call them in an emergency. But ammoniogenesis gets revved up big time.
So it makes ammonia in the...
Proximal tubule makes it. Okay. All the ammonia is made in the proximal tubule from glutamine.
So that ammonia catches that proton and the ammonia moves?
The NH3 catches that proton in the lumen, becomes NH4Cl, and stays in the lumen and goes out in the pee-pee.
And lumen, by lumen you mean
right? By lumen, I mean the outside world. The lumen is always the lumen. Yeah. You got a cat? Get one. Yeah. I mean, when you change the... How do you know when it's time to change the cat litter? I know. Toxoplasmosis. But yes. So that's why I remind you of this. This is how the kidney does it. How long have we known this? Only since this month. No, we've known this forever. But apparently, it's never a bad time to remind people. Okay, here's a clicker question. Which of the following hormone, it should say hormone, not hormones. One answer. Sorry, that's a typo. Which of the following hormone, which one single answer, plays a key role in keeping the plasma potassium concentration within the normal limits of those choices, plays the most key role, the one best answer? All right, good. And you guys have said D, insulin, and I totally agree with that. But 25% of you said vasopressin. I totally don't agree with that. So the hormones I put up here, to remind you a couple things. First of all, vitamin D is not a vitamin. It's a hormone. The kidney, in the proximal tubule specifically, is what activates vitamin D3. So the active form of vitamin D is made in the kidney. So people with kidney failure can't make it. Sometimes we have to give it to them. But that hormone is for reabsorbing calcium and phosphate in your gut, not potassium. Vasopressin is ADH. That's your water hormone, not your potassium-regulating hormone. Parathyroid hormone regulates the calcium level and is phosphaturic. Parathyroid, PTH, phosphaturic hormone. makes phosphate go in the urine, makes calcium come into the blood, but certainly not potassium. Glucagon, I don't even know what glucagon does. Okay, I just put it on there because I needed to come up with another hormone. But the key, as Bob Lowe told you in his in the endocrine lectures, is insulin. So just to remind you that, whoops. Again, here we are. Here's how potassium works. You take all your potassium in by mouth. If you eat 100, 92 comes out the kidney, 8 comes out the gut. That's a steady state for potassium. Okay? That's why if you have kidney failure, you better find a nephrologist. Because you're going to be hyperkalemic because you don't have the 92%, you just lost the 92% of the way potassium gets out. Why do we acutely dialyze people in the middle of the night? Two reasons. Can't breathe, have too much potassium, and they're going to die. Can't breathe, going to die, have too much potassium, going to die. That's when I got out of the bed. I get out of bed because good reason. Give me one good reason to get out of bed. Someone's going to die. That's a good reason. Okay? The pump, you eat your potassium, the pump pumps it into your cells, so at any given time, 98% of it is inside your cells. But in terms of staying in steady state, if you eat 100, you've got to get rid of 100. 92 comes out the kidney, 8 comes out the gut. You lose your kidney, no gut's going to be able to do it. You need another way to clear the potassium, and that's dialysis. Here's another slide that shows the pancreas. And you see all pathways lead to the pump. Potassium has to go in. All the potassium goes in the same way. You can have any hormone you want. Insulin, the most important. Epinephrine, also important. They all converge on the pump. Everything converges on the pump. You got to get the potassium in the cells. The pump knows how to do that. So everything pushes on the pump. That's why the first thing we do if somebody comes in with a huge potassium level, I mean, we can't put them on dialysis immediately. We have to have some way to temporize. So we get that potassium into their cells by giving them what? Insulin. Insulin. You'll never see an emergency room without it because they need it right away. Not for people who come in with high sugar. That you can take your time with. Potassium at 10, you can't take your time. That's what the insulin's for. Get the K inside the cell. Because we'll never get there in time to dialyze it off. Okay. Just to remind you, here is another version of the same slide that I showed you that shows you alpha-intercalated cells with proton pumps and channels. You know, ROM-K is how we get rid of potassium through ENaC. Just to remind you. Another way of looking at the same thing. All right, now, you guys, I'm hoping that most of you recognize this. In the clearance module, I put summary and take-home points. One of those points is the purple one is to know what steady state is. You got to know it. You can never forget it. So do we have to know steady state for this exam? You got to know steady state forever. Remember that clearance is a flow rate, and you take the ratio of two concentrations, two driving forces. The ratio has got no units, and you multiply by a flow rate. And that flow rate, of course, is the urine. Make no urine, have no clearance. That's why when you don't make urine, you need to make it or get dialysis. This just reminds you of the inulin clearance just because it's an example of how we use it because the inulin clearance is special. Inulin is special because its clearance is the GFR. Remember that. So now we have a new question based on clearance. The clearance question. The renal clearance of a new drug, D, is being tested. When the plasma level of D is low, its clearance is much higher than the clearance of inulin. However, when the plasma concentration of D is high, its clearance decreases close to that of inulin. When the plasma D level is low, its clearance is way bigger than inulin's clearance. When the level gets high, its clearance approaches that of inulin. Which of the following three choices, and I should make it three choices, sorry. I'm sorry for your answering people. I have to make it three. I think I do. I don't know. I have to stop. I know. It doesn't matter. Three. You're looking for the best answer. All right, good. Okay. The answer is the green one. Okay, let's go over that. This question was on last year's HSF exam. The one that's coming up, it will not be on this exam because it's here. But I took it off that exam for two reasons. One, I thought it was a little too hard for the exam. And two, I said, well, it even had two other answers. Okay. It is trying to make an important teaching point. This is one of Dr. Gennari's questions from last year. Plasma D is low. What you're being told is if something's clearance is higher than that of inulin, what must be true? It's secreted. Okay? But if it's secreted, but if they're then given a second piece of information that when the drug level in the plasma gets high, all of a sudden you're seeing the clearance fall, what that's telling you is that the secretory mechanism is saturable. Once it's secreting, once you get to a certain point, it can no longer secrete anymore. And you've saturated what you can do, so the clearance goes down because you're secreting as much as you can already. So I think it's interesting because it helps you think about clearance a little bit. So it has to be, when something behaves like this, this is one reason that, this is what drug companies use when they develop a new drug to figure out how it's going to be disposed of by the kidney. They have to test it at all these different plasma levels to see if the clearance saturates or if some process saturates that makes the clearance not what you think it would be. Because when people take an overdose of that drug, you have to know the kidney is not doing as good a job with it in the overdose. This would be very important. So this would be, if a drug was like this, if I knew, oh, they took a drug where the clearance goes down when the plasma level goes up because something's saturating, I have to come and dialyze them. I got to come and take it off myself because the kidney's not going to do it. So this is a very important piece of information to know. So it's a good question. It's a great question. It's a little bit too involved for the exam, I thought. But anyway, it's a great question. All right. What's next? Oh, this one's nice. What is the classic triad of findings that can occur in a person who has too high a level of aldosterone? The classic triad. Okay, magical 50? The answer is, very good. B, two-thirds of you said, two-thirds of you, just like the amount of sodium reabsorbed by the proximal tubule. Don't laugh. Yes, so when you can't shut off aldosterone, ENaC will be stimulated and you'll hyperreabsorb sodium. That's high blood pressure. Because ENaC is stimulated, the lumen will become more negative. That negative lumen will make potassium want to go into the lumen, hypokalemia. Will make proton secretion a little bit easier, metabolic alkalosis. That is the classic triad, B. Okay. All right. Let's see where we are here. Remember, I don't know why I put that in. There's the nephron map. It's got a whole bunch of informations on it. Details, a whole bunch of informations. And now you should be, if you want to say, am I ready? Do I know what I need to know? This cartoon that I showed you at the very beginning of our lectures together, I said, boy, you know, that's...